Sunday Live on 91.3 FM Stereo. Sunday Live.
26 after 8 in the AM. My name is Mohammed. Welcome back. Welcome back. MTN South Africa has partnered with leading medical experts, hosting a free webinar to unpack the most COVID-19 data and trends, including progress towards a vaccine and the psychology behind why many people still refuse to wear masks. MTN hashtag Wait For Me initiative was launched in September to make a difference in the lives of people and communities through its drive to raise awareness about the importance of wearing a mask in order to stop the spread of the COVID-19 virus. Well, joining us online is Prof. Jeffrey Mpashilele, the Vice President for Research, the South African Medical Research Council, to unpack this discussion. Good morning, Prof.
Good morning, and good morning to your listeners.
Thank you so much for the time out now. Focusing a little bit on some of the global vaccine trials ongoing, could you perhaps share with us the latest on the Oxford vaccine trial and the general estimate on how long it takes for a vaccine to be put into production?
Yes, thank you very much for having me. Obviously, the emphasis is on the Oxford vaccine because it's the first vaccine to be tested, especially in South Africa. But we have got many other vaccine candidates that are in phase three clinical trial at the moment. And for the Oxford vaccine, where we are is a phase three clinical trial. And what this means is that they are testing the vaccine to investigate whether it's able to protect against COVID-19 disease. So should this be successful, it means that the results will be analyzed and submitted to regulatory authorities and make an argument for this vaccine to be registered and made available to the public.
Is that
I guess that is the same with other vaccines that are in phase three clinical trials.
Is there a particular reason why perhaps South Africa was earmarked as a country of choice for, you know, the vaccine trial, the Oxford vaccine trial? Are we perhaps, do we have some special qualities about us?
The special qualities that we have is that we do have an infrastructure. We have got expertise, and we have got people who, like you know, the Wits University that is leading the trial, Professor Shabir Madi, who is actually an expert in vaccinology. So clearly, in times like this, when we are facing the pandemic, we need to test the vaccine in places where we know there is expertise, there is infrastructure, and there is the capability to actually do the trial.
Wonderful. Now, at the height of COVID-19, have you perhaps seen a surge in the number of candidates doing research on COVID-19 itself or COVID-19-related effects?
Yes, there are a number of researchers in South Africa and all over the world who are actually prioritizing COVID-19 research. A lot of people who have been working on TB and HIV and many other infectious diseases, they are now working on COVID-19 because we need to find the answers very soon. This is a new virus, a new pathogen, and if we don't have solutions in terms of control and management of the virus, it will continue to ravage the societies. And obviously, this is devastating to the social and economic development of all the countries.
Wonderful. Now, we understand and we acknowledge that sometimes a vaccine can take multiple years to come up with. Are we not hastening it? Do we have enough technology and enough expertise to try and curb that amount of time? Because, I mean, without that, we can't possibly expect a second, third, fourth, fifth wave as well, Prof.
Yes, normally the vaccine takes long. We talk about, you know, at least 10 years to make a vaccine. And the reason for this is because, you know, traditionally, The technologies that were used to make the vaccines used to take quite some time to move from one step to another. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is the fact that in peacetime, when you do a clinical trial, mm-hmm. Obviously the force of infection is less. And what I mean by that is that you will have a few places where the infection is highly endemic. Mm-hmm. And to be able to prove if the vaccine is working, you need to do phase 3 clinical trial in a setting where there is a circulation of the pathogen to really assess whether the vaccine can protect against infection or even the disease mm-hmm. Caused by that pathogen. So the distinction here is that if you have got a pandemic, mm-hmm. The pathogen is circulating globally, mm-hmm. and this affords opportunity to many researchers to conduct clinical trials simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And I think that is actually what is fueling or driving many clinical trials that we are seeing. But the other important thing is just the socioeconomic mm-hmm. Impact of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Now, focusing on, there are people in society and individuals in society who are completely anti-vaccine, and they have multiple reasons for it, citing reasons that it can have detrimental effects, and especially when sometime during the year when the vaccine was pulled out because certain members of the cohort were actually having serious side effects. What message can we share with people who do not believe in general about the nature and the concept of vaccination?
Maybe let's start with, because I feel I haven't answered your previous question 100%. Mm-hmm. You wanted to know mm-hmm. why it's taking short, mm-hmm. Such a short time mm-hmm. To make a COVID-19 vaccine.
Right.
And part of the reason is because we have got the circulation of the pathogen, as I mentioned, but the most important thing is the fact that the technology that we are using today is different from the technology that was used before. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this technology is able to tell us mm-hmm. If the vaccine might work or not work, at least at preclinical stage. In other words, before it moves to testing in humans, and based on that, then we are able to move to do clinical trials in humans and test whether the vaccine is safe, whether the vaccine can actually elicit the right or appropriate immune response, and if that is the case, we assume that it will protect. But obviously, we don't work on assumption. That's mm-hmm. why we have to have this phase 3 clinical trials mm-hmm. to see whether that immune response can actually correlate to protection from infection or disease. Mm-hmm. So part of the reason people might say, no, I don't want to take the vaccine, it could be just that it's related to generic reasons that we know mm-hmm. That have always been there for people not to take vaccines, because it doesn't mean that there are vaccines that we already have. Mm-hmm. Everybody is willing to take this vaccine. Some people will cite culture, others will cite their belief, others will just say, look, the vaccine is not for me, and the others are just skeptic about vaccination because they think that, a natural exposure to pathogen is better than vaccination, because vaccination concept is actually mimicking mm-hmm. The natural exposure to the pathogen, so that you don't really suffer the consequences mm-hmm. of the natural exposure to the pathogen. Mm-hmm. We are able to elicit protection in the body without necessarily being exposed to infection, so that when you are exposed to the same pathogen, you are protected. Mm-hmm. So that is the concept of vaccination. But other people will say, no, I need the real, pathogen. I need to be challenged mm-hmm. by the real pathogen. And it's just unfortunate that we have people like that. But vaccination is just a wonderful thing to do. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you can't force it. Upon everybody.
Absolutely. Well, in terms of the concept of immunity or herd immunity, what exactly do we mean when we talk about herd immunity?
There are two ways in which you can achieve herd immunity. Mm-hmm. But herd immunity simply means the proportion of the population that is immune. Mm-hmm. To the pathogen. Mm-hmm. And you can achieve that immunity in two ways, through vaccination. And once again, this is a novel way of achieving herd immunity. Mm-hmm. Because you vaccinate the population, they achieve the certain level of immunity. Mm-hmm. That will protect against the spread of the pathogen in the community. And then another way is through natural exposure. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the problem with natural exposure is that you don't have control on what will happen mm-hmm. to everybody who is exposed to natural infection. Other people will recover. Other people will have severe form of infection. Those who are unfortunate will eventually die, mm-hmm. From infection. So it's not really the right way to promote herd immunity. The best way is through vaccination. And if a certain proportion of the population is immune, that means that if the pathogen is circulating in the community, then the chances of spreading to different people becomes very less. Mm-hmm. And that's what herd immunity means.
Wonderful. Now, tell us a little bit more about the COVAX facility and the Vaccine Alliance.
Yeah, this is a brilliant initiative by international players. Mm-hmm. We have got the World Health Organization and, Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, and SEPI. So these three organizations actually came together to hedge this idea of COVAX mm-hmm. Facility. What it basically means, I think I can summarize it in three ways. Mm-hmm. So one is the ability to have access to a wide variety of vaccines. In other words, wide portfolio of vaccines when the vaccines become available. Because within the COVAX facility, there are different vaccine candidates mm-hmm. That are undergoing clinical trials, and if these vaccines become a success and they are approved and registered for use, then they can be available through the COVAX facility. Actually, the 9 vaccines that I mentioned already, most of them are actually part of the COVAX facility. Mm-hmm. Then the second aspect is the fact that you will then have a very excellent purchasing power mm-hmm. because what Gavi is aiming to do is actually is pulling together resources from different countries in the form of finances, of course. And then the Gavi will approach the vaccine manufacturers and will be able to negotiate a good price when the vaccine becomes available. Mm-hmm. And the third component is the fact that the WHO will develop a framework, what we call allocation framework, that we think will be fair for most countries, because at the moment, I think it goes without saying that some people, and actually most people, are nervous that if a vaccine is commercially available, only rich countries will be able to have access to this vaccine. Mm-hmm. So then the World Health Organization, because it's been dealing with the vaccination programs globally, it's got an allocation framework that would ensure that both rich and poor countries have access to the vaccine in a fair way. So if we have to use an example, say we have got one vaccine available, then they will say, okay, because there's only one vaccine available globally, we want to make sure that all the countries will have access to, say, 3 or 5% of the vaccine doses initially. And they will ramp up these percentages depending on, you know, the manufacturing scale and the availability of doses. Instead of just one country having all the doses at once, and then the rest don't have any access to vaccine.
Wonderful. Now, Prof, just something out of the norm. People, individuals who have successfully recovered from COVID-19 would have assumably or presumably developed their own set of immunity. Are you aware of research that is perhaps looking at serum, looking at markers in their immune systems that would also contribute to trials and looking at how they developed immunity for the rest of the population?
A lot of research is taking place along those lines, and we you also heard about research that is looking at convalescent plasma or serum. Obviously, all this research is trying to look at the properties of the blood from recovered patients, and they want to assess whether, you know, the antibodies that are recovered from these recovered patients are able to protect against the disease or infection. So that will inform the vaccine development pathway in a way, but not completely. But I say in a way because if we know that recovered patients actually have, you know, protective antibodies, then we know that we will be able to actually, you know, go backwards and see which part of the pathogen is able to elicit the antibodies, and you can actually use that part of the pathogen as a vaccine candidate. You can incorporate it in the vaccine. The other way is that we will know that we can actually use the blood of recovered patients, and I'm not just saying, you know, the whole blood untreated. Obviously, this will be either, you know, the plasma that we know is free from other infectious agents, or it could be antibodies that are prepared from, you know, the blood from recovered patients. And we use this as a protection. They will give you what we call passive immunization. Is a form of protection, just like vaccination. And unfortunately, it doesn't last long because it can protect you maybe for 3 months to 5 months, and then the immunity will just disappear. Unlike vaccination, which gives you long-term immunity most of the time.
Absolutely.
So those are some of the things that we can learn from the blood of recovered patients.
Wonderful. Well, Prof, you shared some wonderful insight with us this morning, and we really do appreciate it. Thank you so very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
It's our pleasure. Have a good one and take care. Well, speaking to Professor Jeffrey Pashilele, he's the Vice President of the South African Medical Research Council, which, by the way, is housed in Cape Town, just a few, well, probably 2 or 3 roads away from Tygerberg Hospital. If you're driving along that very nasty bend, you'll see the South African Medical Research Council there, or head office there, and giving us some insight into, let's put it this way, vaccination and things like that.